Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Drive, man. That was Angie Matson. Yep. She's right now in the mix of making some new tunes, and I'll let you know when they do come out. She's expecting to have a release actually down in June, I believe, and hopefully I'll have some early music to play for you of hers. This is Andrew Fetter, sorry. And I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. I have just a quick announcement. I know next week I told you I have a very special show. It is actually my anniversary show. It is going to be my third year on air as When Pigs Fly here at BBS Radio, which I am very thankful and feel, you know, feeling honored to be a part of the producers and, of course, the listeners and being part of this for the last 3 years. So, in doing so, next week I have a special surprise. Plus, I will get into, I know everybody's been asking about my new and upcoming book and dealing with going out of body stuff. So that's what I'm going to expand upon in about my book about spirit, which, by the way, is unofficially released. I don't know how, but it's somehow on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so you can always look at it there prior. But it will be officially released on the 26th, and again, I will have a very special surprise regarding that. Now, I do have a very, very special guest, and I was just really blown away when I saw him and I checked out his book and stuff. I'll tell you, it is amazing, because when you get into the area of UFOs and extraterrestrials, some people always wink on their left eye, some people might smirk and laugh, and some people might be all kumbaya over it. And what I like what he did, he just laid it on the table and went right into it. And I feel highly honored to have him on my show. He's an extraordinary researcher and author. Nick Redfern, author of Contactees, A History of Alien-Human Interaction. How you doing, Nick?
Hey, Andrew. Doing good, thanks. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good?
You know, I first, before getting into the book and the subject of UFOs and especially extraterrestrial contactees and such, I know a lot of my listeners out there would, and future listeners, because this does go sometimes on it goes into the archive and people listen to past shows. What is your immediate, you know, briefly, what is your background? I mean, if you can just briefly explain where you're about and where you're from and yada yada and all that good stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm originally from England, and when I finished school, I began working on a rock music magazine back in England called Zero. And this was sort of basically where, you know, I went into the world of journalism and did that for a few years. But I'd already had an interest, I guess, a long-standing interest in UFOs and just general weird stuff. The reason being that my own dad was in the British Royal Air Force. He worked on radar. He was actually involved in several incidents where the radar guys tracked unusual objects on the radar scopes approaching the coast of England on several occasions. And, you know, there was no way to prove these were alien spacecraft, but they were certainly UFOs in definitive terms. They were flying at fantastic speeds, and aircraft that were sent up to try and intercept them reported they couldn't even get close and just saw these strange balls of light in the sky. And so when my dad told me this story, coupled with the background in journalism on the rock music magazine, I thought, well, you know, why don't I try and apply the background in investigative journalism into looking into UFOs and things like that. And so that's kind of what I did and what I do now. So I guess I've got my...
How long you've been doing this, the research then?
Oh, 20 years, probably something like that. 22 years, maybe, sort of mid-80s. I worked on the magazine from early 80s till about 85, 86. Yeah, so about 22, 23 years, maybe.
Oh, so you've been working on this quite a long time then. I mean,
not just this one book, but...
Yeah, obviously. Wow. You got some heavy background. So let me ask you this, because I know, and what other books have you written or articles have you written regarding the subject that obviously have a plethora of stuff for 20 years, but can you name other references that people can also check out as well?
Yeah, sure. I've written about 15 or 16 books altogether. I think probably 5 or 6 of them on UFOs, 2 or 3 on conspiracies, and 4 or 5 on another big interest of mine, which is cryptozoology. That's the study of weird animals like Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster. So I kind of write about anything that's a little bit kind of strange and odd, a little bit like me, I guess. So.
Wow, sounds like a Doors song. Anyway, so, you know, now I want to get into one subject. In fact, I sort of brought it in because I know people out there, which I started reading your book, and it's funny some of the stories in here, because it's very humanistic-like approach to in this book, which I thought really well, it was well done. A lot of people, when they write, you know, books on anything nonfiction, it's so cold, cut, straight up,
yeah,
there's no, Yeah, it's very sober, and you don't get the human experience of what the person, so then you can make up your own mind what this person is saying, and I thought that was interesting. And and the funniest story, and I have to ask you again, because I was telling you briefly, was the Brazilian farmer who was seduced, and let me put it this way, he got hit over the head, I guess, dragged into a ship, and then got sanitized, and then he got seduced by a hot-looking alien girl who happens to have red, brilliantly red arm hair pits, you know, in her armpits. So, what was your feeling when you heard this story and what such? Because it's sort of like out of the norm of any. I'm telling you, I've never read. I mean, I've heard of anal probes. I heard of the people, you know, they pull out their. I heard stories of Greys pulling, but never actually having sex in order to breed with, you know.
Well, this is pretty unique. I mean, you know, a lot of people, even me, you know, I find when you first get into the UFO subject, most of what we deal with is things like, you know, good quality reports from members of the public or police, military, and government files, which have now been declassified, showing that, you know, government agencies have at times taken the subject very seriously. Now and again, though, we get these reports, which I kind of call like rogue reports, which don't really seem to fit into any category that, you know, is similar to things that have come before or after. And certainly the one you're talking about, the Brazilian farmer, this involved a guy named Antonio Villas Boas, dates from 1957. And although he was a farmer at the time, he was like in his early 20s, he later became a very well-respected lawyer in Brazil, so I guess it didn't do his career any harm. But his story was that when he was working on the family farm, he was sat on a tractor late one night. Bear in mind, this was quite a way outside Brazil itself. So, in other words, he was out in the country, and it was pitch-black sky. And he said he saw this light coming towards him, didn't know what it was. It closed in, and obviously, he began to realize that it was coming for him. He jumped off the tractor, ran as fast as he could, and said that these three beings or creatures dragged him down, pulled him back to the craft. And it was almost like he felt he'd been drugged or put into like an altered state. He felt kind of groggy and spaced out when he was on there. And as you said, he said this very human-looking woman, if you like, came into the room. And they basically had sex, you know, that was his story. And in kind of like a bit of an ego type approach, he said he felt they were obviously looking for some new good breeding stock, and he was, you know, the ideal person. And, you know, stories like this sound totally outrageous. And according to Villas Boas, at the end of it all, she kind of rubbed her stomach, smiled and pointed to the sky, which he interpreted as meaning, you know, he was going to be father of a space alien or something. But, you know, as I said, stories like this, on one hand, they're interesting and entertaining. On the other hand, they're a little bit kind of cringe-making because, you know, a lot of people just roll their eyes when they hear stuff like this. And unfortunately, you know, some people see it as reflecting on the more serious aspects of the subject. But my view, as you pointed out, and, I'm thankful you did point it out, was that, you know, I tried to present the subject and the cases from a humanized perspective, that it's not all black and white, cold, clinical, sober issues. You know, there are these strange aspects, and to understand them, you don't have to just look at the reports. You have to look at sometimes the quirky aspects of the characters of the people that are reporting them. You know, sometimes the people in the subject are as entertaining as the things they're reporting.
So how much would you say, like, I know, and I've always heard this, like, and this is everybody, and maybe during, since you've been doing this so much, I've heard people say, well, 90% is just pure, you know, made-up stuff, people's infatuations or whatever, made-up stuff, but there is 10% real. How do you determine which is the 10%, if that's the margin that's out there?
Well, I wouldn't say that 90% is actually made up. What I would say is that you unfortunately get a small percentage of people, either fantasists or hoaxers, who want to kind of make a name for themselves and spin a tale. I think most cases are explainable, but I don't think most cases are explainable by hoaxes. I think there's a lot of just genuine misidentifications of things like satellites, meteorites, asteroids burning up in the atmosphere, that sort of thing, where people see something that looks genuinely weird, which they've never seen before, and they think, wow, it's got to be a UFO. So I think a lot of it is mistaken identity. But I do think there is still a very, very small percentage, maybe less than 10%. You know, it's difficult to actually gauge a particular figure, but, you know, it may be as low as 2 or 3%
that seem still two and three is pretty important.
Yeah, where they seem to defy explanation, where we have good, credible witnesses like pilots, you know, who are trained to know what goes on in the skies and recognize things in the skies, where we know government agencies have collected some very good reports, which collectively seem to suggest that there is a UFO presence. But I'll be the first to admit that, you know, this small body of reports often gets swamped by the more sensational stories of alien sex and take me to your leader type jokes and things like that. So, but again, you have to have a sense of humor if you're going to be in the UFO subject.
Yeah, I imagine. Especially after hearing that one. And he's an attorney. Are you sure he isn't running for some presidency or NK or something? I mean, he'd fit right in. Anyways, the other question I was thinking about was, you know, most people, and I've heard this from a lot of different people, they think, and I don't want to assume because I don't like assuming, is that there's been a sudden increase of UFO and contact activity. Is this your, since you've been doing this for such a long time, is this really what your experience is? Would you concur with that or what?
Well, what I would say, Andrew, is that there's definitely an increase in people reporting sightings. Now, I think one of the reasons is, you know, if you go back sort of 20, 25, 30 years ago, you find there was a lot more ridicule, particularly from the media, attached to the subject. So people were kind of reluctant about speaking about the things they said they'd seen or experienced. And today, I think a lot of the ridicule has lifted. It's not as bad as it was 20 years ago. So people are more or less inclined to remain silent. They're more encouraged that, well, if I say something, everybody's not going to laugh now. So I'm not sure if there's more reports or it's just more people are willing to come forward, or it could be, you know, somewhere between the two possibly.
Right, because I've seen that might make sense, because I remember seeing something on maybe even CNN or one of the major medias where they survey, you know, where they said what people believe in at the possibility of, extraterrestrials or whatever. And they show that, like, now there's more of them. The first time there's more of a majority that have beliefs to believe that there are extraterrestrials or UFO, you know, that there's other people other than humans around the world and that we've been visited. It seems that there's been, it's moved in that direction, which makes sense what you're saying. But some people say that it's, these are the times. So I was just curious if you felt there's been an actual increase also maybe due to that, or you just don't know, because that would be
difficult to say really. But I mean, I do think there's definitely a lot of reports going on right now. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, again, think some part of it could be because there's more UFO exposure. People are looking up, you know. Well, as crazy it sounds, it may be that simple. So.
Well, the one reason I was reading this is because when you brought up Robert Dean, and lately I've heard a lot of different people, ufologists or people, researchers or people, they always bring up the name Robert Dean. Mm. And I heard of him, and then I saw him in your book. I go, wow. I really remember this guy. I heard him on a couple of different people talking about him and reading other stuff. And he, you know, you're talking about that NATO and the infiltration. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to quote something that you had put in your book, which was said by him in 1994, which is actually more recent, since I think he was doing working for NATO. As a quote out in the do, a NATO UFO researcher for NATO, which people probably aren't aware of. And he says that they could be sitting next to you in an airplane or a restaurant, in a coat and tie or a dress, and you would never know. They could be sitting next to you in a theater just like this, which almost implies that they're amongst us already. Almost like, I hate to say it, not to put us, they're like the fear factor, like they present in that TV series called V, as lizards walking among us, but it would be like, you know, that there are already UFO or aliens amongst us.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a good point, because, you know, I guess the popular image that people have of aliens is like the classic image of these little small guys with big heads and black eyes. You know, that's what everybody assumes aliens look like. And certainly there are a lot of reports like that. But equally, like Bob Dean of NATO said, he said that NATO had got reports suggesting that there was one type of alien that looked very, very human-like, to where they could, you know, there might be one or two little noticeable differences where you might just look twice at the person. You know, perhaps their lips were thinner or their eyes were wider apart or something like that. But for the most part, they could pass amongst us. Now, you talk about the whole V scenario. That's actually one that apparently NATO were quite concerned about, the idea that these beings could look like friendly humans that we could relate to, but they might have sort of like an ulterior agenda and motivation behind this sort of seemingly benign wanting to meet us, so to speak. And again, you know, it sounds highly controversial until you realize that, you know, Bob Dean is a verified former employee of NATO. There's no getting away from the fact that you have a down-to-earth regular person employed in the military and having, you know, achieved a notable rank, talking about extraordinary phenomena. So, you know, I think at least we have to sort of address these types of accounts.
What would you say under NATO that was exposed by Robert Dean that would concur that there is a verification that there is a UFO, there have been verified UFO and extraterrestrial contact within or human interaction amongst humanity?
Well, I think there's actually several things. One is, you know, there's been many people now who've spoken out about these so-called very human-looking aliens. It's not like it's just Bob Dean. You know, I mean, there's literally now probably as many almost.
I'm talking just from NATO.
NATO. A lot of things like they also talked about having on file things like pilot reports and radar reports that had come through NATO headquarters. You know, where you'd got military personnel not just speaking to the military in their own respective countries, but also to representatives of NATO. So in that respect, you know, we have similar military reports coming from there as we do as from, like, the U.S. Air Force or the Russian Air Force or whatever.
And what would you say, regarding cynics, that when they question your and they make, you know, excuses or examples or what about...
Yeah.
What you're saying as opposed to what they're trying to say, well, you know, it's all mumble humble, you can make anything out of anything.
Well, you know, I mean, as far as people who have differing views, my personal view is that, you know, I actually think it is essential that people who are believers, open-minded like me, cynics, skeptics, debunkers, that we should all actually share views, because at the end of the day, you know, none of us really know what the complete answer is. And, you know, I don't want to, even for me, I don't want to be labeled as like some wide-eyed believer. You know what I mean? My views are sort of molded on having looked at the evidence and tried to come to some sort of conclusion. You know, I don't feel the need or the want to believe in UFOs. I just think there's something going on based on the amassed evidence. And I think if there are people who are skeptical out there, I would hope that we can sit down and logically discuss why they're skeptics and also discuss why they feel evidence for this case doesn't stand up or that case doesn't stand up, rather than what often happens is it sort of deteriorates into like a schoolyard fight of my dad's bigger than your dad, no, my dad's bigger than yours, you know what I mean? And it just becomes like a fight in a word rather than actually achieving anything, and that doesn't get us anywhere, unfortunately.
Well, I think because it comes on the premise of, in the past, and I was reading about your thing with Adamski, which, I mean, you can expand upon, and then later on they felt that he was, I know he was being investigated by the FBI, and he had a very, almost like Oswald attachment to the Soviets. And he predicted that the Soviets would control the world, and he had a prediction that San Diego would be bombed, and yada da. And those who don't know who Adamski is, maybe you can elaborate on why he was being watched by the FBI and who he was and what he expanded upon. I know that's without giving everything away, of course.
Yeah, sure. Well, George Adamski was probably the most famous of all the contactees. He was originally from Poland, moved to the US with his family when he was a little kid. And he claimed that in the late 1940s and onwards, but particularly in the early to mid-50s, he had encounters with human-like aliens out in the deserts of California, sort of a remote part of the desert, several hours outside of Los Angeles. And he said that these aliens allegedly told him via ESP or telepathy that they were here because the human race had now developed atomic weapons and rocketry, and that we were becoming a threat, not just to potentially causing the extinction of our own race, but we were going to be soon heading out into outer space, which, you know, history has shown we've done. And they were kind of viewing us as kind of like the teenagers getting ready to leave home, and we needed to be kind of brought under control, so to speak. And Adamski went on to write several books. His first one, Flying Saucers Have Landed, which was published in 1953. In its first printing, it sold in excess of 120,000 copies. And so he developed a huge following. But the reason why the FBI watched him was because, as you just mentioned, when he was questioned, he said about what sort of governments he thought the aliens might have. He said, well, they're probably communist, and that's like the way of the future, and even on our planet, Russia's going to dominate the world. And, of course, you know, at the height of the Cold War, it's probably not the best thing to go on the lecture circuit and say all that, knowing that people like the FBI are going to sit up and take notice. Now, you know, if somebody sits in their living room and says to a friend, Russia's going to dominate the world, the FBI is not going to know and probably not even going to care. If you're on the lecture circuit and you're speaking to people in the region of 125,000 who bought your book, and you're saying how wonderful communism is because aliens told you it is, they are going to sit up and take notice. And yeah, they actually open an extensive file on Adamski, which, as I point out in the book, this doesn't necessarily vindicate his claims of having met aliens, the fact that the FBI was secretly watching him. It just means that if you're going to say those sort of things, they're going to watch you. They're going to find out why you're saying it and who you're saying it to. So.
Look, they were watching Einstein, too, and they were watching, Martin Luther King, and who knows what they, if they were involved with what happened to him, and JFK and RFK, you know, you can go on and on, and then you can question about the FBI's and, you know, involvement with, you know, others. But it did. So you just brought a revelation to my eye just now. Is that Adamski? And I've heard this too about the revelation. And this is without getting to postulating a proposed theory or whatever. Why the aliens are here? Why to save mankind? Come on, you know, some Jesus to save us attitude. His idea that, and I've heard this too, that, since there's been, like, our, almost like you can put a mark where when we first let off the first nuclear bomb, that UFO activity, if you're looking on a graph, just spikes straight up to the sky, perhaps because now we've gotten to a whole new weapon system that, wait a second, these people are, this, you know, group of, you know, us, civilization, are getting out of hand here, and we may do something that could affect now their little group. You know, like, I've heard stories where, and I'm postulating because I heard people say there's like a federation of extraterrestrials, and they're watching what the hell we're doing, and maybe that's where they're keeping a close tab, because that's what seems, and I'm postulating right now what I've heard other people talk about, and from a scientific point of view, you can't really get into it because you don't know what they're really saying because nothing's on record in your point because you would just be doing, hey, you know, you're like in the U.S. they call it being a Missourian, like the show me state. I'll believe it when I see it. So you're just going through the facts without postulating a theory. So my question is based upon what Adamski's saying and what seems logical in approach, that would make sense. Why would extraterrestrials be all of a sudden this activity? If I was an extraterrestrial and I had this unbelievable amount of technology, and let's say if you had it and you're probably had a different, let's say, more enlightened view of certain things, and maybe even in a spiritual context and everything else. And you look at humanity, and they're like, what the? Like, we're a bunch of barbarians fighting over whose God is better than mine, and then dividing up our, you know, we're basically, you know, people laugh about gangs and streets, but we're just bigger gangs on the map of a globe, fighting that this is my border and this is my land, not yours, and this is my gold, and they're probably looking at us like a bunch of idiots, you know, like we're very barbaric. You know, that's my thing. If I was an alien looking down, you know, be scratching their head just looking at the, what the hell, are they, you know, or they come here just to watch a TV show because we're so, you know, we're, you know, perplexed. I'm just speculating here, just off free thought, but what do you think about?
No, I actually agree with you. I mean, the entire subject, I would say, for it is difficult, you know, to come to a conclusion unless you sort of go down the belief path. And then, as you say, it isn't really much more than a religion then when you start believing this or believing that, because until we actually have the facts, you know, it all has to be admittedly theories. But, you know, you're quite right that it was pretty much in the direct wake of when atomic bombs were first developed and used that we saw this spike in UFO activity begin to develop all around the world. And, you know, it comes certainly in peaks and waves and drops, but it's always been present since, you know, atomic bombs were developed on quite a large scale. You know, and again, there are people out there who talk about federations and things like this of, you know, different aliens working together. And, you know, we're not able to deny it, but, you know, we don't have that proof yet. But I think, you know, it's logical, I guess, that if there are people out there and they see us doing what we're doing, and basically, you know, most of our time is taken up fighting each other, you know, or destroying this or whatever. And so you would imagine that we would be the type of people they would keep a close eye on. And of course, it's not just atomic weaponry. You know, if we'd only developed atomic weaponry, then we're only really going to be a threat to each other. And if we blow the planet up, well, you know, they could basically say, well, that's too bad, you know. But
right.
On the other hand, our development of atomic weaponry pretty much time-wise came with the very early developments of rocketry and to where now, you know, we can send men to the moon and certainly space probes to Mars and, you know, Saturn.
And out of our solar system.
Yeah. So when you've got atomic weapons and you can now leave the planet, that, I think, is another reason why somebody might be wanting to watch us and keep a close eye on us. You know, now whether that's for sinister reasons, that if we get too reckless, they'll destroy us, or whether it's, you know, maybe it's almost like a scientific experiment or a historical experiment, you know, kind of watch the natives and just see if they blow each other up and then record it in kind of like a, you know, a equivalent of somebody writing a historical look at the American Civil War. Do you know what I mean? We just
right.
don't
or,
know what
or it's Or it's like entertainment, you know,
let's
go watch the idiots go to a ultimate fighting cage match amongst the humans.
Yeah, like reality TV or something.
Yeah,
like
let's go watch the fly over near Earth. You want to see some real exciting stuff? Yeah, our boring day is just sitting looking like a, you know, collecting, you know, some kryptonite on some planet, right? Or some crystals. So the other thing that was interesting that you brought up, which I think is really poignant, and it correlated to something else I remember reading, is you brought up about the Red Scare and how to interlink between the UFO infiltrators and the scare that which goes into what Adamski was, which was that the UFO ideology or whatever was a way to to create a propaganda thing amongst the United States. So they therefore became part of the Red Scare. That if you were someone who's talking about UFOs, then you may have been a communist or you're proposing the demise of the United States, which correlates to something I was going to read, because I remember there. I believe I'm not 100% sure that the Brookings Institute, I think it was in the 50s, came out and proposed their think tank, so to speak, which I'm going to get into how they're connected, but that advised not to bring up to the public or expose to the public or disclose to the public about UFO activity for fear of what the public might react to, which might be part of the Red Scare, but also another agenda, which I'll get into later. So what was your, because it seemed like it correlated together.
Yeah, the Brookings report's an interesting one because it's an officially sanctioned report where, you know, a lot of the, like the Air Force, for example, their approach to the UFO subject was to try and resolve what UFOs are and are they a threat to national security and what do they want. The Brookings report, however, delves more into how or what the response of the public would be, the church would be, etc., at like a sociological level, you know, at a cultural level, if the existence of aliens are proven and that they were here. You know, sort of how's the general public going to react, not whether or not they really existed. And, you know, it came to some interesting conclusions and ideas, and more interestingly, one of the ideas was whether or not the public should even be told, you know, or should they be kept in the dark for their own good, so to speak. But, you know, I mean, these are all valid things that the Brookings report talked about and that we still see in the UFO subject today. You know, how would it upset, I guess, conventional religions if UFOs were shown to exist and aliens existed? How would it affect us from an economic level? For example, let's say that, I don't know, the US government or the Russian government, let's say hypothetically, as some people suggest, you know, they've got their hands on crashed UFOs and massively advanced technology. Well, what if that technology does away with the need for oil? You know, what if it's some super advanced power system that, you know, we never need oil, petrol again? If that technology was introduced overnight, in theory, it could bankrupt every oil producing nation on the planet. And then you could have, you know, large scale war and upheaval that, you know, who knows where it would lead.
Yeah, you bring up a real good point because, and this is what I have a feeling, and this gets into energy, that let's say they did have, let's say, free energy. Well, let me put it this way. Right now we have the ability to produce free energy with electromagnetic energy, and I said this on Fashion Electro, and I had guests on electromagnetic energy, and then there's anti-gravitational abilities we have today, but not including geothermal and others. We have the ability to immediately implement free energy. And free, I mean, we place it, will be a cost factor, but once it is employed, it would literally be free. It would not cost nothing else. And what would happen, it would shift us very quickly, not right away, quickly from this illusional Federal Reserve monetary system to one of probably more likely to a resource system, and it may sound like Star Trek-y, but it is more like the Star Trek where, you know, money is now obsolete. People would not need, if you have free energy, your clothing, the immediate goods would be taken care of. People would then have jobs and the relationship to thinking their own, and this gets into a whole issue, which I don't really want to get into, but it gets into their own persona, so to speak, of dealing with things, and it affects those who are in power. So there's it causes a ramification. Those who are sitting on the supposedly with the so-called New World Order system, if you want to call it that, the Bilderbergs or the Federal Reserves or whatever, which I don't know, you know, how you get into that, but it would make sense that they would be the biggest scare to finding free energy, which could be, let's say, if there was actual admitting to a connection to extraterrestrials, or they had devices that it could be reverse engineered or actually given that could employ that would be a great threat, because basically you're saying, by the way, remember those keys you had to the bank? Mm-hmm. They're obsolete now because we don't need the bank no more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that would make sense from what your standpoint, what you're talking about. How do you feel about the New World Order, Bilderbergs, and the relationship with extraterrestrials?
Well, you know, I think there's no doubt that in the last few years the world has changed, and I know people say, well, there's a war on terror, and you know we have to accommodate and change because of that. But you know, some of it seems to be going down like a real Big Brother state-controlled path, in my view at least, which goes far beyond the need for security in terms of the war on terror. It's almost like aspects of the war on terror being conveniently exploited to allow for everybody to be placed under some slowly creeping Big Brother society. You know, it's like it's not coming overnight where everybody realizes, and it's like some, you know, overhaul and taking away everybody's freedom. But by doing it bit by bit and creeping up before people know it, it's like, well, what happened to the world of 20 years ago? Do you know what I mean? And
right.
I think there is something to be said for that. You know, the idea of people now almost coming to accept that their phone has to be tapped. You know, even if they're just, I don't know, they work at a local store or they're a mailman or whatever. It's, oh, well, you know, if I'm not doing anything wrong, it shouldn't matter if the government taps my phone. That's the classic line they come up with. And to me, that's nonsense. You know?
Yeah, that's Franklin's own saying is if
yeah,
you
exactly.
give away a little bit of freedom, you don't deserve freedom.
Yeah, exactly. But, and I think my view is that we have this creeping up of that sort of society. And we have, you know, the whole issue of, like, globalization, you know, in Europe now we have the euro, you know. Yes, you still have in England pounds and France has its, you know, its own currency, et cetera. But we also have the euros, which are becoming more and more prevalent. And, you know, there's the idea of the European Union. And then what's next? You know, there's sort of talk of America, Canada, and Mexico, you know, this sort of, I guess, combined body almost that some people are suggesting might be coming along. And then you wonder, where's it going to stop? You know, then you hear all this sort of stuff about people, microchips and things like that in your skin, you know, to make sure everybody, we know where everybody is. And it sounds science fiction, but if you look at the world of 15, 10 years ago before 9/11, and you look at it now talking about, you know, Big Brother, you know, all this just society, government watching you, you would never have imagined that would have been, you wouldn't have imagined America 10 years ago would be like that.
And we're like living, I live in Vegas, you know, back and forth, but it feels like you're in a casino. There are like, if people walk in a casino, you got literally cameras almost every 15 feet, and believe me, their eyes watching, you know, there's those, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Casino, there would be like, you know, there's always, if there's eyes watching one boss, and then there's another guy watching that boss, and another one to the boss, and then the boss is watching you. Besides the boss watching you, there's another camera watching you as well, and from three different angles. So it's almost like everybody's watching everybody, and it is almost like a totalitarian, slowly approach, you know, you know, and you gotta be careful and people. But my question now, going back to extraterrestrials and UFOs, how do you feel the interrelationship with the Bilderbergs and the New World Orders and Council of Foreign Affairs and the UN and Trilateral Commission and all those good folks?
Yeah, well, I would say that probably the one area more than any other is the economic and the technology area. I mean, you know, you only have to look at things like the Middle East, the sheer billions and billions of dollars that can be made by these organizations, whether it's, you know, those type of bodies or it's, you know, companies, but there's massive amounts of money to be made, and there's massive amounts of money to be made by upholding the whole oil industry. You know, if the oil industry went away and we had free technology and free energy, the vice-like grip that a lot of these people have over us, corporations, oil companies, gas companies, that would be gone. And I think the whole point about secret organizations having plans for us and having control is dependent upon them retaining control. And, you know, they control us by the flow of oil, because without that, you know, you can't even get in your car and go anywhere if you haven't got gas. So I think that the concern from these organizations with respect to UFOs is specifically ensuring that until the very last moment, they don't have to unleash this technology and risk losing their grip. Only when, you know, the day comes, whenever that is, when we finally exhaust the oil fields, then they'll probably play this card, and they'll charge us twice as much for whatever's going to come next. So.
Right, but wouldn't that also come into effect, let's say, because they're trying to hold back from the full disclosure, also to the point that would change people's belief systems. Not because a lot of, you know, you got literally, if you go just through, look how many people are very much aligned to, let's say, their church or whatever belief system or mosque or synagogue or whatever, and they're locked into this system of belief system, which is in a way in helping control the masses, as Constantine did with by creating modern-day Christianity, as he would call it, that he would, therefore, by controlling the masses, therefore you can sit on the throne, and they're just holding back where they don't have to, and perhaps that's why the ridicule of disinformation, because you can like watch, like CNN has no choice but to show a UFO coming out of Chicago when thousands of people see it. They, I don't know if you heard about that. Then you know, they try to smirk and make a joke about it, that we got to check the character of these people, like thing, or Fox News or any of them. I notice the mass media, when there's something thrown right in their face and they have no choice but to air it, they sort of laugh it off.
Yeah.
In a way to try to diminish the truth behind it. Mm-hmm. But it's like what you're saying, that there's like so much pressure going on that they may not have but a choice. It may not be their choice, and maybe that's why perhaps it's the fear of what they're fearing, that maybe what's coming around the corner ain't what they want, so they're trying to move things faster than, because I have a hunch that they're moving things, trying to move things faster than they wanted to, because of that might be possibly. Now I want to get into another issue, because now I'll get into the religious stuff and belief systems. You know, I'm sure you know Eric Von Däniken's book, Chariot of Gods, which I remember back in the 70s when I was in college, that it was extraordinary, but blew me away, and it just reminded me, and of course I wrote a book called When the Angels Have Risen, which dealt with the same issues, the relationship between religions and whatnot, with UFO activity and alien interaction with humans, but I did it more of a spiritual context as well. I have a theory of belief that there's like what I call alien souls and star souls, but that's a whole other thing. But on a physiological looking, anthropological, because that's how you're looking on a very, you know, not, you know, without putting any esoterics in there, from Israel to Egypt to Peru to Mayan to Hopi, have you dealt with any of the anthropological, or including also, I forgot, the Far East and India, as similarities of instances, whether it's paintings or scriptures or dogmas that correlate to UFO or actually alien involvement with humans, even from in the past, even as ancient times?
Well, you know, I mean, certainly you can look back at, you know, ancient cultures and find things that we can today interpret in like a UFO context. I mean, for example, the ancient Greeks. There are legends about the ancient Greeks in some of their battles, seeing what they described over the battlefields as flying shields. You know, and some people put sort of a UFO angle to it when they talk about, you know, biblical accounts of, you know, the angels coming down and mating with the daughters of men, that sort of thing. And, you know, if you go back, for example, to ancient Babylon, they have some very interesting accounts of what they describe for their time period as demons that would come into the bedrooms of people at night and steal babies, or that they would like extract sperm and eggs from men and women and create demon offsprings, which is actually, other than them interpreting the phenomena as demons, and today we interpret it as aliens, that's actually very similar to the whole alien abduction scenario that we have today. It's just, I guess, the motif and the interpretation of what's going on that's changed. So, yeah, you can go back in cultures, as said, from the Bible, ancient Greece, Babylonia, all having reports and encounters that we can upgrade today to, like, a UFO context. And, of course, the big question is, whether we're actually correct in doing that, you know, or is it only because we believe in UFOs today that we think what they were seeing were UFOs? Do you see what I mean? It's
right.
Well, it's difficult to answer, but there is a historical precedent of being able to say, yeah, you can place a lot of ancient historical things in a UFO context.
Well, the reason why I bring that up is because, I mean, I've been involved with it right now, almost pretty much wrapped on a major documentary that I've been working on with the Hopis, with the Hopi, and one aspect is they talk about the Pahana and this missing stone, the description of the Pahana. They talk about a white person, but they talk, the person is actually extraordinarily tall and blue eye, blonde hair. But then what really caught my attention was their infatuation with a blue star coming. All of a sudden, a blue star coming, approaching, a red light running across the sky. And it's coming, and they always talk of Pleiades. And I remember from the Book of Hopi, and they described it, they've had well over, even before Copernicus or any of the, even going back into the time of the great days of Alexandria in the library, knowing the thinking the proposal that the world was round. Even before that, they had the understanding that the world was, listen, not just round, but there was, it was riding on an axis.
Mm-hmm.
On an angle, and then access would shift and move, and when it did move, that would cause events to happen, and it did in the past, which now scientists say, yeah, that's what happened. Well, we had the ice age and way in the back, because there was a momentary shift in the, which affects electromagnetic systems and yada yada. I don't want to get, but it was amazing, and the only way I can think of is the first thing is, how the hell they know this? You know, there it had to have been almost like some extraterrestrial connection, and I keep on seeing it from whether it, you know, and then you go to the Book of Ezekiel and you read the first paragraph, or you go into Egypt and the way they did the pyramids and the lecture, and in Peru, it's, you know, that's what it keeps on popping in my mind, that, you know, Eric von Daken was on the nose of stuff, and here it is, and you know, people laughed at them back then, because I remember 70s when he came out, they'd all come on. Then people like, you know, 15, 20 years later, that, wow, this guy, he was right. And it's now, it's like things that happen, like you were talking about, Dean and things, you know, that was just, what, 10 years, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And stuff he was saying even before that, you know, coming to light that now they're, wait a second, you know what, these guys were onto something, you know. And it seems we went 5 steps back, but now we're going, you know, moving back forward, which brings us to my final thing. Which I want to ask you is how and what you see in present form with the UFOs and ET encounters. Would you see increase, or do you see interaction, and do you see, or do you feel, from your view and research amongst within the science community, is coming to a fruition to as an acceptable, because there's always a twinkle in the eye amongst scientists coming out to, let's say, call it, to the truth of it, you know, saying, you know, coming to the head saying, yeah, you know what, there is actually some, you know, major nuclear physicists are saying, you know, more scientists saying, you know, even though they'll talk in a, you know, room quiet, I'm like, yeah, I believe in extraterrestrials, but like you said, they would never come out on the forefront. Would you think scientists and others, including more extraterrestrial, I know this is a twofold question, more ET activity along with exposure among scientists besides governments?
Well, you know, I think if we look at the subject itself, I think overall, if you go back, say, or compare it to 10, 20 years ago, it's not ridiculed anywhere as near as much as it was by the media. And the scientific community is more open to it. You know, you have things like the SETI program, which existed for quite a while, looking for extraterrestrials. So I think that's a positive angle. But, of course, the only thing that's ever going to prove, you know, that UFOs exist is if either governments admit it and say, yes, we've been liaising with aliens, or we've got a crashed UFO and dead bodies and here they are, and they allow, you know, the general scientific and medical community to examine the recovered remains. Or, you know, we see something in the classic sci-fi fashion of the aliens landing on the White House lawn or whatever. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened. And whatever these beings are that are responsible for the what I believe is a small percentage of real UFO reports, they don't seem to be here to destroy us, but equally, they don't seem to be here, you know, to save the rainforest, save the polar ice caps, cure overpopulation, etc. It seems that whatever they're doing is more like for a selfish personal reason, which is precisely what we do, you know. So I think that, in other words, the phenomenon stays very much in the background, and I don't see it right now that that's changing. We may be getting more reports, but I don't see any evidence that they want to land and reveal their secrets to us. And until that happens, or unless it happens, you know, we could still be asking these questions 20 years from now as people were, you know, the equivalent of me 20, 30, 40 years ago. A lot of people want the answers to come, but unless the aliens do something or the government does something, I'm not really sure how we get them. So
it'd be, it almost sounds like a Star Trek thing. Like if a star, you know, that what they say, their one rule, don't get, I don't know, I can't even remember how it's said, but how they, if they come to a civilization, they don't get involved because they don't want to change their society. So sometimes they try to stay out, don't get involved with them or try to just be observers outside so they don't affect their history or their outcome. In a way, that's what you're basically saying, why they're going to be around here. So this could be going on and on until they say, you know, enough is enough, or, you know, people, the savior thing, or that this is just my idea that there's enough, there's maybe a split off of within humanity where many more people become more relate to extraterrestrial events or them themselves. So then they will interact more and more, so there will be almost like a split. But in some instances, it's almost like somebody made the comment that, you know, it's like the old Columbus thing when approached with his boats when they came to the Americas. The Native Americans didn't even see the boats because they never saw the boats until, you know, there was a medicine man or a holy man said, hey, by the way, can't you see there are boats right in front of you? And then they go, oh, there are. It's like because they never can recognize it. Almost will be the same thing that, you know, some people might have an interaction with extraterrestrials and then others won't because they may be on a different reality or recognizable reality. And the same token, it might be that they have maybe if they were near us and they have some, let's say they're saying they have this vibration or something in their brain that if they got near us, it would blow our brains up unless we were able to have a brain, let's say an alpha wave, that could relate to them, you know, or be on the same level.
Yeah.
That could be a possibility. I mean, there's so many possibilities. But and these I'm talking about because I've heard other people expound upon them. That's why I was curious. Now, my last question is, you know, and we sort of got into it. I mean, we already sort of jumped into it. What do you, based upon your research, and I know we're hypothesizing, but based upon, because you must show a correlation of activities, and what do you foresee, do you feel there will be any change in the future as far as extraterrestrial or a disclosure factor coming in? What do you feel, based upon your own beliefs as a person as opposed to maybe even a scientist?
Well, I think possibly, you know, it could go several ways. One, as I said, it could be exactly as it's gone on for the last 60 years and we just end up with more reports but no further answers. In saying that, there are a lot of people now, even people in the world of politics, pushing for governments to reveal the facts. And it is a case that some governments are now starting to release their files on a larger scale. The British government have just released another large batch of documents in the last few days. You know, so it could, some people have argued that this is actually kind of like a slow build-up to get us all used to and acclimatized to the idea that aliens exist, and then they'll release all the information when they think everybody's ready and primed enough. But then again, it could be something kind of right out of the blue where the aliens show themselves. Now, my view is that if this was all just some sort of somebody's equivalent of a science experiment or something like that, it won't go on forever. There's going to be a point where it ends or they take it to the next step. And if it ends, we'll know because we won't have any more UFO reports. We'll know they've gone away. Or it could well be that what actually happens is that it then is taken to the next level, and maybe that would involve more sightings in the sky and beginning to show themselves step by step. I think that's a possibility. But again, rather than, you know, freaking us all out and landing and kind of our society being absorbed overnight because they're so advanced, I think it could possibly be something where we'll see more and more approaches slowly and slowly to where we are used to it, and then we get like the open showing, so to speak.
Wow. Well, Nick, I'm putting to a head on my show, but I'm telling you, this has been amazing information. reading your book, and now I got to read some other stuff of yours. Could you tell my listeners how they can get in touch with you and try to get hold of your book?
Yeah, sure. My website is nickredfern.com, NickRedfern, and people can contact me there. And also, I do a lot of blogging and on all the latest news on UFOs, aliens, Bigfoot, you name it, the Chupacabras, any news that's sort of weird that interests me, you know, it goes on the blogs, and people can, there's a book section there where people can click on the various books as well and find out how to get hold of them.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on, Sean. Again, I feel honored to have you on, and it's been extraordinary.
I look forward
to have you on again. And when you come with your next book or new information, just keep in touch, because I definitely want to keep up to that, especially on this type of information.
All right, cool.
And thank you. And thank you for everybody for listening, and God bless you all. And I'm going to end up closing a song I haven't heard in a little bit. It's one of my favorite by Denise Vasquez. We all belong. God bless y'all, and have a glorious, glorious weekend. Take care.
Thanks, Andrew.
Times I've tried to tell you, 20 times I've cried alone, with some surprise how well you cut my feelings to the bone. Don't wanna leave you really, just wanna break the ice. Do I look silly to you when I yield to your advice? When you say seguro que es verdad, el cariño que es sincero no se acaba con crueldad. Olvida lo que fuimos y desprecias lo más bien, pero juntitos venimos que la luna era de miel. Junto a ti solo es mi ángel. Junto a ti como radio de luz que ha brotado el cielo. No importa por venir sin sufrir, es mi triste destino. Junto a ti hasta el fin de camino. Close your eyes and try to sleep now. Close your eyes and try to dream. Clear your mind and do your best to try and wash the palate clean. We can't begin to know now how much we really care, but I hear your voice inside me and I see your face everywhere. Now I say we belong to the light, we belong to the thunder, we belong to the sound of the words we both fall in under. Whatever we deny are in base, the worst of the better. We belong together. Junto a ti, junto a ti, solo es mi angelo. Junto a ti como radio de luz que ha brotado el cielo. No importa por venir sin sufrir, es mi triste destino. Junto a ti hasta el fin de camino.